Blow the horn. Let's go.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the only place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide!
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Missed flights, wrong turns, lost rental cars, toll booth operators with an attitude, it just didn't matter. Because they were all part of last weekend's grand adventure. An adventure that found us in State College, PA, counted amongst the largest crowd ever to see the Tide roll. And roll it did to a very workmanlike victory over number 17 Penn State, 27-11. Tommy, how do you tell the tale of Saturday's outing?
I have to first talk about the Penn State fans. Of all the away games I've been to, the class that was shown to us was by far the best I've experienced in all the road games I've gone to.
Oh, this was by far the best road best road game that I've ever been to. It's cliched to say that the student section never sits down for an entire game, but the Penn State student section, we sat right next to them. They did not sit down for an entire game. I mean, they were 40,000 strong. They had choreographed songs and shaker routines and you name it. Probably the worst thing of the whole trip is I still can't get Sweet Caroline out of my mind. But that was a hell of a road trip, and I can't wait for us to schedule another home and home up there. Hey, I had such a good time. I would go back to State College to watch Penn State play anybody else.
Well, I started to say we could wear our Alabama stuff and we would still get the universal greeting of Roll Tide. So I guess we got to set this up real quick for those that didn't get to go. From the time we got there at 3 in the afternoon, minutes before kickoff, till 12 hours later when we left the bar scene at 3 a.m. or 2 a.m., we probably had 400 Penn State fans yell Roll Tide to us. And really what I mean, and you got to set it up for them as far as even buying us shots.
Oh, absolutely. I was going to say we got free drinks at the bar. People wanted to take their pictures with us. They wanted to chat us up on football. It was amazing. I think we're both happily married, but I think we sum it up with the guy that we talked to as we were getting in the rental car that was a Bama fan, said he was about to call his girlfriend to break up so he could take advantage of the nightlife in State College. It was a hell of a time. I would go back and see them play anybody on a Bama off week.
I agree with that.
All right, let's get to the action on the field. How would you tell that story?
You know, it was a hostile environment. You know, as you said, it was 107,000 fans. You know, it was interesting to see what quarterback came out first, who it was going to be. Obviously, it was McCarron. But we had adversity early, and I think this team played with – I think they showed some good maturity today. Up against the ropes early, they didn't get down. They stayed focused and kind of weathered the storm early.
I agree. I know that, you know, and it's Tuesday evening as we're recording this, and we would have loved to record this, you know, closer to after the game. I think the tenor of my message has changed over the last couple days. I was very disappointed coming out of the game, but as we sit here now and I reflect back on the game and I have a chance to look at some of the stats, I'm a little more pleased with what I saw. It was a huge road game for this I don't want to call it a young team, but there's some young players at some key positions. And this was definitely we had some adversity, not only the opponent, but the travel. State College is not an easy place to get to, even when you fly up there. I thought workmanlike is, I guess, how I describe it. But I think we played well. I do think the quarterback, you know, battle or controversy or, you know, decision on who the true starting quarterback is going to be, I think that's resolved. I think it's McCarron, clearly. He played the entire game. He had no picks. He had no sacks. And he threaded a needle, you know, kind of Brett Favre-like gunslinger, threaded a needle to Michael Williams in the end zone for a touchdown. And I think after he settled down, he had a couple, you know, early missed passes to Mays. Once he settled down, I thought he was very efficient, and I'm pleased with how he played.
You know, another thing that jumped out at me in the ball game was how many drives that we were able to sustain, as far as how efficient we were with the ball and how we were able to put drives together. I think I looked at the stats, and we had four different drives during the game where the drives were over 10 plays each. And so it was kind of a mixed bag there. We had, you know, we had several three and outs, but then we had three or four times where we were able to sustain the ball and convert some key third downs.
Yeah, I that's exactly right. I was looking at the time of possession, and I think that the time of possession far outweighed Penn State in the first quarter. But I think both the second and third quarter, we had the ball over 10 minutes, and we had it, you know, maybe half the time in the fourth quarter. We did convert some key third downs. Norwood was, I thought, impressive. He had three catches, and they all were third down conversions.
Just to clarify, he's the guy that had the had the big moment last year against Penn State, right?
Yeah, he did his little backflip into the end zone last year, and wasn't seen much of after that.
Well, you know, I thought it was funny as I was looking at the stats. You know, before this, I thought it was kind of interesting. He actually played in two games last year and finished with three catches. And I thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, that was his last game we saw him all year, but yet he had three catches to, you know, in this game. And like you said, they were all third conversions. And we got to have somebody step up and play that role now that we don't have Julio in that role.
No, and that's exactly right. And stepping up really is what Norwood did. That was sort of the name of his game on Saturday. You know, DeAndre missed the first quarter, and Deron Carter was a late scratch in terms of the trip. I read where there was 1 day notice where Deron was kind of ruled out for the trip. And so Norwood, you know, probably practiced all week, not expecting to get the playing time that he did. And I thought he came up big.
Yeah, I actually read on Deron that the team was notified on Friday and that they actually, you know, released that press release or whatever before the game. What did you think? You know, we were there, and for those that didn't get to go to the game, why don't you tell everybody what we thought about DeAndre White and why he missed the first quarter?
Well, we were kind of kidding, you know, at first, just, you know, scouting the sidelines, not seeing him, you know, in the play, and then just wondering what's going on. You know, he was there. You could kind of tell that he wasn't hurt. He was just, you know, shuffling around behind the line of scrimmage or, you know, on the sidelines with his helmet. And I just, you know, kind of made the comment as the first quarter was winding down. I said, you know, I bet dude skipped class this week, and we'll see him first possession of the second quarter. And what did we see?
He was in there at the 15-minute mark, and it was kind of funny because – you and I saw him start to pace and start to, like, walk in circles. And he started to, like, pump his helmet and get very, you know, very excited. And so hopefully if it was something like that, I hope he learned his lesson a la DJ Hall from a few years ago under Saban.
Yeah, I think, you know, hopefully he did learn his lesson. I will say, though, that, you know, he's a young kid. Clearly there's some, growth opportunities, maybe maturity issues there, you know, skipping classes 2 weeks in. We don't know that he skipped class. I want to be very clear there. We don't know what it was. That was just, you know, me sitting in the stands speculating. But clearly something earned him a one-quarter suspension. But then he never really seemed to get into a groove. He did not come in and start his game in the second quarter. He just never seemed to really get into a groove, maybe just had a couple of catches. He did not seem nearly as involved in the offense as he did last week, and I expected him to come in and really play a role when he did play. I really wasn't right as impressed this week.
Well, I got an interesting thing for you on the stat sheet. You might not have noticed that you and I talked about how he immediately was open as soon as he came in the game, but yet – not only did he not have a catch, he wasn't even the target of a pass.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the lack of maturity of, you know, I can't come in at that moment and pick up my game. And so hopefully that'll be another learning experience for him.
Yeah. What'd you think about Trent? He ended up netted out on 111 yards. It felt like he carried the ball, you know, 40 times, but he had 26 carries on the day. You know, that's a nice net average. I was surprised to see that 26 carries in a game was his career high at Alabama. And then he added two touchdowns to the mix. What did you think about Trent's day?
You know, I think Trent's going to get his yards. And I guess this is just as good a time as any to talk about it. You know, the first play from scrimmage kind of epitomizes Trent. Because on the first play of scrimmage, you know, Anthony Steen and DJ Fluker both try to block that behemoth tackle, which we're going to be a Coach Saban like and call him number 71 and not give him anything other than his number. But they both try to block number 71. Then they decide to both leave their man to go block the linebacker. Trent gets stuffed in the background, in the backfield by this huge guy, and yet he still gets 3 yards on the play. So my point is that even if Trent gets hit in the backfield, he's going to fall forward and get 2 or 3 yards. So that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, there were another number of times we went for a field goal or even when we did the fake punt, and we can spend some time with that. But Trent came off the field just really animated. You know, I can get this. I can get this yard. This is something that I can do. And you're right. You know, the two guys let the tackle through. They both sort of diverted somewhere else. They both, you know, kind of scraped instead of took them on. And Trent still got his yards. I want to parlay that into my commentary on the offensive line. You know, there's still a work in progress, and you know that's where we came in, or that's where I came in at the preseason. I think in the preseason, you know, if I kind of do some self evaluation, I think in the preseason I was probably too optimistic on the offensive line. Coming out of spring, I was a little too pessimistic on the offensive line. 2 weeks in, I'm disappointed where we are. We're still making these communication type mistakes, but I also think there are things that we can tighten down. So we're still a work in progress in the offensive line. I'm disappointed that that's true two weeks in, but you know, here we are.
You know, I think as much as I like DJ Fluker, you know, just to kind of touch on the offensive line here for a minute, like you're saying. You know, DJ Fluker is in year two, right? Year two as a starter, and he had never played offensive line before. You know, he was the number one rated offensive lineman in the nation, but yet he had played defensive line in high school. And I think in the case of DJ Fluker, we are seeing that he really misses Barrett Jones, and he really misses having Barrett Jones over there next to him. The guys that I really have to – you know, so he's a sophomore, and so, yeah, he's learning in year two, and he's played in 14 games. Anthony Steen, you know, I say it again, he's got to show me. Granted, he's a sophomore, too. Last year was his first year. But, see, he had less snaps than Fluker, right? Because he was backing up Barrett Jones.
Yeah, significantly less.
Yeah, he was a backup. And so – you're right. We were probably too optimistic going into the year because we got youth on the right side of the ball, and on the left side of the ball, I don't think Chance Wormack is showing what I thought we would see in his third year.
He seems to have regressed. I want to make sure, you know, Fluker's a redshirt sophomore, so he's 3 years in the program. But
I was just saying year two as a starter. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's fine. But I feel like my sense is that Chance has regressed. Steen's, to be honest with you, probably playing a little bit better than I had expected. I think what we're seeing is miscommunication sometimes between he and Vallejo, sometimes between he and Fluker. I think part of that's a function of all the sort of hopscotching we did and moving people around in fall drills rather than, you know, solidifying a five. But then we had to do that to identify the five. And so hopefully the solidification and the communication is just so critical to, you know, offensive line play that, you know, that'll show itself in the coming weeks. And I'm hoping a big outing this week, you know, really goes a long way in that direction.
The Alabama football team had an unfortunate event happen, you know, after spring, which caused them to have to move Barrett Jones. And
yeah.
it makes you wonder if – I guess what I'm trying to say is Barrett Jones was going to be your right guard again, and he was going to be able to sit there and help Fluker in year two in game 13, 14, 15, et cetera. And think about – and I guess what I'm trying to say is Steen was still going to be on the bench. Steen wasn't going to be the guy. Steen got thrusted in. Suddenly we had a competition at right guard, and Steen won, but I don't think Steen would have been a starter this year had we not had that unfortunate event.
Well, and that's true. The loss of Aaron Douglas really did, you know, kind of force our hand at the left tackle position. And, you know, of course, that's the least of the concerns and the sympathies that we have with that loss. But, you know, talking about things on the field, because that's what we do. It did force our hand moving Barrett. We thought that was one of three options at the time. And, you know, and clearly that became the lead option. And then Steen next to Fluker is just what we have. So we'll see how it develops. We're not a finished product on the offensive line by any stretch of the imagination. We'll see how it develops.
We will. I just would be curious as Cyrus gets some additional snaps against some of the North Texases. You know, maybe halfway through the season, we kind of call what we think the starting five will evolve to by the end of the year. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I was surprised that Cyrus didn't really see any meaningful reps. You know, it was kind of garbage time when we put in the second line and he played sort of the last, you know, minute of the game. I was surprised he didn't see any meaningful snaps during the game.
No, I agree with that. Hey, one more thing real quick. What do you think about the decision to put Trent out there on the kickoff return to start the game when he had not been in that role in the first game?
I'm not a fan of that at all, but I think there are two factors that played into it. I think Mays was a little banged up. He's been had some pain issues this week, and you know, I didn't read anything more specific than that. And then with DeAndrew missing the first quarter, I think that contributed to in the hostile environment, and it was in the face of the student section where Trent caught the ball. Where he fielded the kickoff. I think all of those sort of conspired to, I'm going to put my sure-handed man back there.
I'll buy that.
And they short kick. And so if they're going to kick it to the 15, you know, let's put someone back there. You know, that I think that contributed as well.
I would buy that.
I'm not a fan of it. I I'm no more pleased that we did it, but I can understand why we did it Saturday more than I can understand probably any other time he's been back there.
Okay. What else jumped out at you in the ball game?
You know, I think on defense, you know, we were, I would say, dominating but nondescript. And then we dropped way too many interceptions. Lester on back-to-back plays had picks that went to replay. And both of those were rejected. They were
actually called picks on the field, and both overturned, right?
They were both overturned. Yeah, absolutely. And they, you know, they were back to back plays. I think Dre had a near pick. Barron had a near pick. Mosley had at least one near pick. I mean, we're talking five or six near interceptions.
What did you think of how Penn State came out though? Because you know, when you look at the stats, you know, they come out throwing their first two plays. And kind of took us off guard a little bit with some sprint draws and called some plays we were not expecting, kind of had us on our heels. You know, they ran 16 plays in that first quarter and ate the first 7.5 minutes off the clock. And you and I were both thinking, man, that offense needs to come out and do something because that defense is going to need a rest.
Well, and they did, and they tried to catch us off balance. And to some degree, they did catch us off balance. The fact that they drove, for only what ended up being a long field goal, I think was fine. And then the defense really got their legs under them. And for all intents and purposes,
they
shut out Penn State,
yeah,
you know, for the rest of the game. There was the late touchdown that, you know, that came after an interception, or I'm sorry, came after, just a short field that we gave them. And then that, you know, kind of scored that in garbage time. But for all intents and purposes, you know, it was a very nondescript dominating performance by our defense.
Well, you know, in looking at the stats, after that series, they had four plays. Well, then I really think the key of the game, as far as, you know, a momentum killer, as Saban likes to call it, was, you know, they're throwing a crossing pattern to their stud tight end, and Dre puts his helmet on the football and knocks the ball out at midfield. And at that point, it's a 10-3 ball game. And they're at the 50-yard line, and they've already started moving the ball. And, you know, we talked about this team getting fumbles and not getting enough fumbles last year. And so suddenly we get the ball, and we go down and score, and instead of it being 10-10, it's 17-3.
Well, you know, think back years and years ago and all the grief that Mike DeBose was given when he said, you know, football games sometimes change on, you know, 4, 5, 6 plays. And you think about that play that you just mentioned where, you know, Dre puts a hat on the ball. You think about where they were driving across the 50 and a holding play backed them up. And yes. And they had a first down.
They had a first down.
Yep. You know, across our side of the field. And then you back them up with the holding penalty, and they end up having to punt. And then you take the very near miss, and from, you know, where we were, it looked like it could have gone either way. But on the fake punt that we got the first down, and then we drove that down for our first touchdown after going three and out twice,
right?
To make it a 7-3 ball game,
right?
You take just those three plays,
right?
And it could be a different outcome. And so those are three plays that sort of piled up some motivation and energy on our side, but deflated their balloon at the same time.
What'd you think about the fake punt call?
I didn't like the call. And
did you hear what Saban said after the game?
I asked
him point blank afterwards.
I did. And how many times have we done? And it's not that many times, but it just kind of stands out that we've done a fake punt in, you know, similar style to that.
Let me ask you this. Sorry to interrupt you. What do you think? Now that you think about that play, what's the last time you remember the last big time Saban's done that, or what jumps out at you?
Well, I think the recollection I have, most recently is the national championship game against Texas, and I think we were kind of baited into that. But we've done plays similar to what we ran on Saturday. And, you know, either just barely gotten it or not gotten it. And I've heard Coach Saban say very similar things, that the guy ran the wrong way. You know, we had it wide open over here, and we didn't run the ball that way. And so, I guess I need to go back and watch the tape on that one and see what I really think on that one. But I'm going to just kind of take a step back from the mechanics of the execution of that play. And there was either a hole there or there wasn't. We got it. Okay, that's fine. But I'm going to tell you, in that situation, run Trent. If you're gonna just put your head down and try to get that 1 yard, then don't dick around. Go with your bull and get your yard or two.
If it's that short of a yard, yeah. And I got to go back and look at that play, and Smelly literally just made the wrong call. They only had 7 guys, David, up on the line of scrimmage on that punt formation, Penn State, and only 4 guys on the line of scrimmage. They had 3 guys backed up like at linebackers. And so the outside guy pushed the Penn State guy out to the side, and Smelly just, instead of just cutting, all he had to do was cut inside him. He had 3 blockers in front of him. He could have run 40 yards. Instead, he just takes a cut to the right and goes between the center and guard and just gets stuffed. And so when Saban says he missed the hole, he missed a hole about 3 yards wide.
Okay. So you broke that down, and so that's good. I've got the game DVR, and so I want to take a look at it some more as well. But, you know, still, even if he had hit it and run it for 40 yards and scored a touchdown, it would be one of those, well, that's cool, but that's just not how I would have done it. I would have put my bull in there and let him get the yards.
I agree when it's such short yardage. And I guess what I was curious about there is, it was interesting his reply after the game for those that didn't hear it. He was like, if it works, it's a great call. If it doesn't work, it's a horrible call. And he said it comes down to execution.
He says that with, you know, some sarcasm too, right?
No, he does, but I guess I just you know, when he did it in the national championship game, I was even shocked he did it so deep in his territory. And he said, in this interview, he said, we needed a spark. We needed some momentum. And I just didn't figure him for a guy at his 40-yard line in the first quarter away at a place like Penn State that he would even try something like that.
No, I didn't expect it. But we ran it and it worked. So, you know, I guess good call.
What else? Anything else stood out from you on defense?
I thought, we just kind of tracked the DB play and how we kind of define our base defense. And so, I found that we played mostly nickel. We played some dime, not nearly as much dime as we did against Kent State. We played a lot more of what Saban would call our true base, which is a 3-4. I think you and I would both acknowledge that our true base is a nickel with three corners and two safeties. But we did play more of what Saban would call the 3-4 base. And so Jarrell got more snaps today.
And Nico got more.
And Nico got more snaps. Saturday they both did. And I didn't see that they really either of them turned that into much. And it may be several weeks before they accrue that many snaps again.
No, I agree with that. And what's interesting about our formation is I think you would agree that the formation that we seem to be running the most in that nickel is C.J. Mosley and Mark Barron, almost like an inside linebackers, and, you know, walking up Upshaw and Dante Hightower. What did you think about Upshaw? Because we talked about the injury, and they've talked about it after the football game, and he said everything's fine, my oblique is fine, but – man, if he was fine, he sure didn't put much up on the stat sheet.
No, he didn't. And, you know, you saw him and thought maybe he was limping around. I saw him at one point when he came out. It looked like he was holding his hand, and it looked like maybe he had some extra tape on his hand. You know, it turns out he had and he didn't injure it during the game. It was something apparently from practice. But he had a strained oblique. And I can only say that that's probably an injury that I'm not apt to occur.
Right. No, I agree. I understand what you're saying. What did you – I guess the other thing I would mention, I guess, as far as the defense is that we did come up with some key fumble recoveries. I mean, this team needs to force fumbles. We had not been doing this. They said it was a focus. And the defense gave the offense some short fields. And the one other thing I'll say about the defense is that I'm still not impressed with the play of Josh Chapman. He had a few more stats in the game, but in looking back at the tape, we do not have a guy taking up a double team on the inside.
No, and I would like to see some more dominating play from our DL, but we said, you know, going into the season that we know what Chapman is. He's not going to be that sort of, Glenn Dorsey type, Nick Fairley type world beater in the middle. He's just going to be a space eater, and he can do that. I think what we end up seeing, because he doesn't get the push or even try to split some double team, we end up seeing a lot more Nick Gentry just because he's fast and has that first step.
No, that's true. What did you anything you saw on special teams?
I think on special teams, kind of across the board, I was disappointed with the punting. We punted six times for just a 37-yard average. I thought that was disappointing.
Let me ask you this. Why do you think he seems to be – you think he seems to be more inconsistent this year than he was last year?
I want to say yes, but I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt and say maybe we don't have enough sample size. I'd like to see some good booming punts, and I haven't seen one yet. So hopefully we'll see some of that Saturday.
What did you think about, isn't the rule of thumb on punt returns that if you catch the ball at your 4-yard line, that you should, let it go in the end zone?
You should, but if you're going to return it 44 yards, it's probably all right.
Well, that was on our side of the field, and so obviously it looked like they set up the line, and Saban said that he was starting to read the blocks better and read the calls better, but nine times out of ten, I don't think that works out good. I think in the SEC, and LSU's gonna drag him down at the 5 yard line.
Well, I think Vinny had a nice block that sprung that run, but I do think the rule of thumb is, you know, you put your feet on the 10, and if you have to go backwards, you just don't catch it.
I just hope it's like, good job, but don't do it again.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, oh no, oh yes, kind of play, and I think Vinny kind of bailed us out with an incredible block, and you know, Mays is he's getting better, and so he did demonstrate some vision and got some good return. That may earn him a little bit of latitude, but I just think there's principles that you don't challenge, or if you continue to challenge them and you get burned, and so you know, fielding the punt on the 5 is one of those things. The more you do it, you're going to end up getting burned more times than not.
Who's your mini game ball go to?
On offense, I'm awarding my mini game ball to Kevin Norwood. You know, he had only 3 catches, but they were all for first down. They were all third down conversions, and the fact that he stepped in with really just a day notice that Daron Carter was not going to be able to play, that he was going to miss the trip. It was probably late breaking news that DeAndre would miss the first quarter, and I think Norwood stepped up big.
Okay. I've got to give mine on offense to Michael Williams. I gave him a lot of flack last week I gave A.J. McCarron flack for trying to, thread the needle to Michael Williams, and you don't thread the needle to your blocking tight end. But A.J. McCarron made a very ill-advised pass in the end zone that I hope he never does again, and Michael Williams held on to that ball. But then the athletic catch that he made to set up a field goal in the third quarter, when he caught that 24-yarder down the sideline, and he actually went up and caught the ball at its highest point.
Yep.
That was probably the best catch I've seen that kid make since he's been here. And, when you look back at the stat sheet, we had Colin Peake with 30 catches. We had Preston Dial with 30 catches. We need Michael Williams to have 30 catches this year.
Yeah, Michael Williams could, apparently develop into that type of player. And, I was firmly convinced that he was only a blocking tight end, or, predominantly a blocking tight end. And I think that he has shed that mantle in the first couple games. Apparently he's lighting it up, catching a ball in practice, or McCarron wouldn't be so free throwing him the ball.
What did you who would you give your mini game ball to on defense?
I think I'm gonna pull a Tommy and go with two guys here. I think that
it's okay.
I was impressed with Dre's play. He went up against a very tall receiver for a good portion of the game. He did put that hat on the ball and force a fumble. And I think if I read the stats correctly, he had 2 forced fumbles. And so I think that's certainly impressive. And then Milliner very quietly had 3 pass breakups, and I thought that was impressive. In terms of really, really helping to defuse the Penn State passing game.
Well, you kind of took mine, because I was going to mention Dre just because those 2 forced fumbles. I mean, putting his head on the ball was so huge, because we just haven't had that. And if I've got to come up with another guy, I guess I'm going to have to mention C.J. Mosley. He's a headliner guy, but, man, to be a sophomore – and to be asked to play so many different roles of a nickel linebacker, as well as, as we said it, that's our base formation. I mean, he's just all over the field. And his ability to just, I guess, just his speed. And he's starting to develop the power to go with that speed.
I agree with that. We spent a lot of time saying that, C.J. Mosley was a revelation last year, that he was growing up before our eyes. And we're just seeing the next, progressive step there for Mosley. I think he's a heck of a player. He put up some good numbers, and he is going to continue to blossom and be a star at the linebacker position here at Alabama. Hey, next week we've got North Texas coming to town. What's your prediction for that?
I got to honestly tell you, man, I don't know a whole lot about North Texas as it relates to their program. But I do look for the opportunity for I think both quarterbacks are going to get to play more. I don't think we're going to see the three series, but I hope that we see Phillip Sims the whole second half, just because I want him to get some snaps. I'd like McCarron to come in there and, and score five of his first eight possessions and then get to sit out a lot of the ball game. I'd like to see your boy Jalston Fowler and, you know, Trent get 15 carries and be done. And, you know, it's a night game, good from us from a standpoint of conditioning. You know, I think it's probably going to be something in the neighborhood of about a 49-7, 49-10 ball game.
Okay. I'm looking at a 54-6 contest. I do think we see both quarterbacks play. I'm looking for a big offensive day, obviously 54 points, but a big offensive day running the ball and passing the ball. I'd like to see us get up, you know, 250, 300 yards on the ground. Probably not, you know, 225 in the air, a lot of running yards late when we've got the score padded, if you will. But I tell you what to look for in Saturday's games, and that's a wrinkle. We're going to introduce some wrinkle on offense, and if it's Blake Sims at quarterback, or if it's running some sort of wildcat, or if we run some more plays out of the pistol position, I think we're very intentionally, as just as we get into the SEC schedule the following week against Arkansas, we're going to put something. We're not going to show all our cards. We're not going to do all, you know, sort of trick plays. But we're going to put something on tape, on film, that demonstrates, yep, there's a wrinkle here. That's my big prediction in the game, that we're gonna see something, some wrinkle in the game.
Well, I hope it's not Blake Sims and the Wildcat. I'd like them to save that for Arkansas.
Well, I think everyone kind of knows that we have it, but it would be interesting to just see a couple plays.
No, that's true.
All right. Well, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and roll Tide. Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
And everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's so blessed to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide! I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Young and they can play it against you. And make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.